Hi, boys and girls. Like you, Santa is listening to the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. Oh, 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 oh,
oh. Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell rock.
Greetings and welcome to this, the 42nd episode of the Merry Little Podcast of MyMerryChristmas.com. My name is Jeff Westover, host of the podcast, the Merry Forums, and the little website we fondly call My Merry Christmas. This episode of the podcast introduces our new sponsor, Wasatch Wagyu. If you don't know what Wagyu is, well, let me tell you, it is simply the best beef in the world. You've heard of Kobe beef, many have, and it's a rare thing to find anywhere because Kobe beef only comes from Kobe, Japan. That world-famous beef comes from a breed known as Wagyu, a word which literally means Japanese cow, and it's available now in all kinds of varieties from Wasatch Wagyu. Wasatch Wagyu raises certified Japanese bloodline Wagyu right here in my own backyard in the Wasatch Mountains of Utah. They've signed on as our sponsor and as a big contributor to Santa's Sleigh, which, as you know, is our annual effort to help families in need at Christmas. And we hope you stay tuned to the end of this episode for an offer that they have specifically for our Merry Little Podcast listeners and for the benefit of Santa's Sleigh. Our topic this time around is Christmas Eve, that night of magic and wonder we all anticipate and count down towards every year. I have to wonder, and I have for a while now, is it Christmas we really celebrate, or is it Christmas Eve? What makes Christmas Eve what it is? Why do we love it? Why don't we give, say, December 23rd, the kind of attention that we give to Christmas Eve? It is, after all, the day before, the best day in the world, as told to us way back when by Paul and Storm.
Today we sing the praises of December 23rd, although it's not a holiday per se. It's just the day that is the day before the day before the day that is the best day in the world. The 24th is Christmas Eve, the 25th is Christmas, and the 26th is Boxing Day and marks the feast of Stephen. But the 23rd is mostly spent just marking time until the earth rotates around its axis once again. Today we sing the praises of December 23rd, though no one else would seem to give a damn. It's just the day that is the day before the day before the day that is the best day in the world. Too late for office parties and you're done with Secret Santa, but too early to go driving off to Grandma's through the snow. And metaphorically speaking, it's the next to last minute, so you still have one more shopping day to go. Today we sing the praises of December 23rd, 'cause if we don't, nobody ever will. It's just the day that is the day before the day before the day that is the best day in the world. It's just the day that is the day before the day before the day that is the best day in the world.
I think the first thing we need to note about Christmas Eve is that December 24th isn't really the day everyone thinks it is. You see, Christmas is a very, very old celebration. You've heard me argue before that it even predates Christ, that the core celebration of Christmas began long before the Nativity, that it was a prophesied and anticipated event. People knew it was going to happen. That sense of anticipation and later celebration led to what we have come to know as Christmas Eve. We've just merely forgotten it or have stopped telling the story. our modern technology and telling time, even the 24-hour news cycle and the modern online world of the endless media stream has taken us away from the old world traditions of Christmas, including the daily traditions that set up what we call Christmas Eve. You see, back then a day wasn't what we consider a day now. When our clock today clicks over from 11:59 p.m. to 12 a.m., we have moved from what is one day into another. We especially make note of this twice a year with the practice of kicking time forwards and back as we adjust for what we ridiculously call daylight savings time. When we set the clock on those 2 days of the year, we go to bed in one day and wake up in another. We do that every single day of the year, whether we set the clocks back or not. But it never used to be so. In fact, in many places around the world, especially in Jewish tradition, the end of one day and the start of another was not marked by the midnight hour. It was marked by the setting sun. As dusk came, so did the start of a new day, and it continued until the sun went down again. Where did such a tradition begin? Well, if you consider the Old Testament, and thus the heart of Jewish tradition, you have to look at Genesis during the creation period, when God called the light day and the darkness he called night. The evening and the morning, as the scripture says, were the first day. So when you think of the earliest traditional celebrations of, well, anything, they began in the evening hours. For Christmas, it was Christmas evening, not a time before, but a time of Christmas. Those evening hours after the sunset, hours that constituted a new day, has really been the stage that has set both the real and the fictional of Christmas Eve for thousands of years. So much has happened over the years during those magical nighttime hours. Of course, the Christmas story itself begins with a Christmas Eve tale as the shepherds were watching over their flocks by night. That beloved true story has given rise to traditions of Christmas around the world. In Italy, for example, most families have a nativity scene in their home, but the baby Jesus does not arrive to that manger until Christmas Eve. In the Philippines, one of the most popular decorations is something called a parol. This is a bamboo pole or frame with a lighted star on top. It represents the star that guided the wise men to the baby Jesus. Catholics, of course, around the world celebrate the midnight mass, believing that the Christ child was born during the midnight hours. Christmas Eve is known the world over as a time for special foods. In Ukraine, for example, 12 meatless dishes of the Christmas Eve supper is served on a white tablecloth, said to be symbolic of the swaddling clothes of the baby Jesus. The giving of gifts, the coming of St. Nicholas, as we have discussed before, all have symbolic ties to the birth of Christ and figure prominently from culture to culture as the hours of Christmas Eve pass. But even non-Christian cultures note the passing of Christmas Eve. In Mandarin, the language of the Orient, Christmas Eve is called Peaceful Night. Jewish scholars dating back to the 17th century have called Christmas Eve Nibelnacht, which is Yiddish, and I'm sure I'm butchering it, which is a clear reference to Christ and Christmas. Of course, we cannot discuss the history of Christmas without actively acknowledging the pagan elements within it and the traditions we gain from their celebrations of Yule centered on the darkness of the season.
Amber called her uncle, said we're up here for the holiday. Jane and I were having solstice, now we need a place to stay. And her Christ-loving uncle watched his wife hang Mary on a tree. He watched his son hang candy canes all made with red dye number three. He told his niece, it's Christmas Eve, I know our life is not your style. She said, Christmas is like solstice and we miss you and it's been a while. So the Christians and the pagans sat together at the table, finding faith and common ground the best that they were able. Just before the meal was served, hands were held and prayers were said, sending hope for peace on earth to all their gods and goddesses. The food was great, the tree plugged in, the meal had gone without a hitch, till Timmy turned to Amber and said, is it true that you're a witch? His mom jumped up and said the pies are burning, and she hit the kitchen, and it was Jane who spoke. She said it's true, your cousin's not a Christian. But we love trees, we love the snow, the friends we have, the world we share. And you find magic from your God, and we find magic everywhere. So the Christians and the pagans sat together at the table, finding faith and common ground, the best that they were able. And where does magic come from? I think magic's in the learning. Cause now when Christians sit with pagans, only pumpkin pies are burning.
The Danish people and their history bring a lot to the table when it comes to Christmas. In fact, their history is a microcosm of the story of Christmas through the ages. They have traveled, or evolved, you could say, in their celebration of the season. Anciently, they celebrated the winter solstice with a festival called Yule, a time when the spirits of the dead came back to visit the Vikings of old. The Vikings of the pagan era were prone to set huge fires during these darkest days of the year, probably to keep warm because they were in the north, but they did it also as a celebration of the winter solstice or of Yule. They did this to encourage the return of the sun and to dispel the hordes of dead spirits that were believed to haunt them during these dark hours. Jule Nis, or Nis, a small, mischievous, and aged male elf, attired in gray homespun, wearing a red hood and long red stockings with white clogs and sporting a long beard, became over time representative of the spirits of dead ancestors. As Denmark progressed from paganism to Christianity, Nis morphed from a tormentor to a guardian of those who celebrated Yule. While Nis became a guardian, he was still prone to pranks. They can allegedly be seen by cats, and they tend to hang out in barns or attics. The Christmas Eve tradition is to leave them out a bowl of rice porridge, which somehow contains properties that keeps all of those pranks in check. Yule itself has a reputation that has wandered, shall we say, over the ages. For royalty and the wealthy classes, it was every bit the excess of Christmas that we know so well from many societies, with plenty of feasting, whoring, and drinking to be had. But in the 10th century, a change began that halted the excess of Yule and turned it completely around into a different direction altogether. I was stunned to learn recently that one of my ancestors, ironically, is today held responsible for making that happen. His name was Harold Bluetooth Gormson, and he was my 34th great-grandfather. I've been able to trace my genealogy directly from my father to him, straight back more than 1,000 years. Ironically, Christmas looms large in the timelines of King Harold's life. Harold was the second son of a Norse king named Gorm the Old. Gorm was pagan, but his wife, Queen Thyra, was Christian, and she raised her two sons, Canute and Harold, to be Christian. Now, these two boys were split between the divided beliefs of their parents. Canute tended to be like his mother. He was educated, patient, and principled. And my grandpa Harold took after Gorm the Old. He was a bit of a conqueror. He had some swagger, and he tended to carry a chip on his shoulder. Some of it could be called sibling rivalry. Canute, you see, was the eldest. He was tabbed to take over his father's kingdom, and he was quite literally a fair-haired boy, famous for his white hair and good looks. He came to be called in his lifetime the love of the Danes. Harold, by contrast, the snotty little brother, had no such charms. I can see why I'm related to him. He had something of an ugly disposition, and he was difficult to get along with. Harold had few friends, and to boot, he had some dental problems as well. In time, he came to be known as Harold Bluetooth, because he had a rotten tooth. Of course, as these boys got older, there was trouble. Because Canute was favored, he was given land. All Harold got was a few ships. But he made the best of it, building in time a large fleet that he used to pillage and conquer all over Scandinavia. But boats were not enough for my grandpa Harold Bluetooth. He wanted land like his big brother. But his dad, Gorm the Old, just ignored him. As both were en route home for the celebration of Yule one year, A fleet of Herald intercepted the few boats of Canood on Christmas Eve, of course, and they won at it in full Viking battle. Because Harald had more ships, he had the advantage, and Canood and all his men were destroyed. Now all Harald had to do was to go home at the biggest time of the year during the celebration of Yule and break the news to Mom and Dad. Harald knew there would be a problem because he knew Canood was highly favored by their father. In fact, he recalled that King Gorm had at one time declared that whoever shared the news of Canute's death would himself be put to death. So Harald decided he wouldn't be the one to break the news. Harald was pretty smart and he adopted a good strategy. Instead, he sought after his mother and broke the news to her through his foster brother. Queen Thyra was having none of it, though. She didn't want to tell the king that Canute was dead because she didn't want to die. So she told Harald that he would have to break the news to his father. But Thyra took a little pity and advised Harald about how he should go about this. He was to tell Gorm that two of his hawks had engaged in a fight. One was white and the other gray, but both were excellent birds. The result was that the white hawk had perished. So Harald went to Gorm with this fable, but Gorm didn't seem to get it. He just continued to drink and carry on with the celebrations of Yule, as they were prone to do. Seeing that Gorm didn't get the message on Christmas Eve, Queen Thyra decided he would understand better on Christmas morning. She draped everything in black cloth. When Gorm saw it in the morning, he asked, "Have you decorated the hall with black cloth to announce the death of my son Canute?" Thyra replied, "Those are your words, my lord." Gorm, still hung over from his drunken state of Christmas Eve, sat down and he died. This whole scene, of course, made my 34th great-grandfather the new Norse king. He would go on not only to rule, but also to bring together the countries of Denmark, Norway, and Sweden to Christianity. It was his life of action as Norse king that led 21st century developers to borrow Harald Bluetooth's nickname to new technology that would bind together wireless devices. And each time you use your phone over Bluetooth in your car or pair a device to Bluetooth speakers, you make a silent nod to Harald Bluetooth. And you likely owe me a dollar because I am his heir. King Harald was no fool, however. He united Scandinavia peaceably, blending the traditions of pagan Yule with Christian Christmas, turning the dark days of the winter solstice into holy days of worshiping Christ. King Harald was, like me, a family historian. He built traditional pagan graves at first for his parents when they died, but later had their graves moved to a more Christian burial site near the church in Jelling, Denmark, where he is from. He also erected what is called the Jelling Stones, which are boulders with runic writings of the king's history as well as that of his family, including his claim to uniting Denmark, Norway, and Sweden under Christianity. Christmas Eve continued to play a part in the life of King Harald, including a Yule festival where he entertained his warring son and son-in-law and had to keep them apart. Eventually, one of his sons, Sven Forkbeard, what a great name, he would go on to briefly become King of England, crowned, in fact, on Christmas Day.
"'Twas the night before Christmas when all through the house not a creature was stirring, not even a mouse. The stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas soon would be there. The children were nestled all snuggled in beds while visions of sugar plums danced in their heads. Then Mama in a kerchief and I in my cap had just settled down for a long winter's nap. When out on the lawn there arose such a clatter I sprang from my bed to see what was the matter. Away to the window I flew like a flash, tore open the shutters and threw up the sash. Well, what to my wondering eyes should appear but a miniature sleigh and eight tiny reindeer with a little old driver so lively and quick. I knew in a moment it must be St. Nick. More rapid than eagles, his horses they came. And he whistled and he shouted and he called them by name. Now dash, now dance, now prance, and fix. I gobble, I give it, I dollar and blitzin'. The top of the fort to the top of the wall. Now dash away, dash away, dash away off. So up to the housetop the horses they flew with a sleigh full of toys and St. Nick was too. And then in a twinkling I heard on the roof the prance again, pawing up each little hoof. As I drew in my head, was turning it around. Down the chimney St. Nick
came with a bound. He dressed all in fur from his head to his foot. Clothes were all covered with ashes and soot. A bundle of toys he had flung on his back, and he looked like a peddler just opening his pack. His eyes, how to twinkle. His dimples, how merry. His cheeks were like roses. His nose, like a cherry. His droll little mouth was drawn up like a bow. And the beard on his chin was as white as the snow. The stump of a pipe he held tight in his teeth. And a smoking in a circle, his head like a wreath. He had a broad face and a little round belly. The chook when he laughed like a bowl full of jelly. He's chubby and plump, a right jolly old elf. And I laughed when I saw him, in spite of myself. He spoke not a word, but went straight to his work. And filled all the stockings and turned with a jerk. Crazy, and laying his finger aside off his nose, and giving a nod up the chimney he rose. He sprang to a sleigh, to his team gave a whistle. Away they all flew like the down of a thistle. But I heard him exclaim ere he drove out of sight,
"Happy Christmas to all, and to all a good night."
The amazing thing of the old recording that you have just heard is that it is 65 years old, recorded by Art Carney, long before rap was ever a thing. The other thing is that the words that he speaks is of a Christmas Eve tale that were written by Clement Clark Moore nearly 200 years ago. It would be important to note that the story of A Christmas Carol, an entire work of fiction written by Charles Dickens, are now 176 years old, proving that even in fiction, the tradition of Christmas Eve magic dates back centuries. What magic will you be making this Christmas Eve, and what stories will be told of it 200 years from now? This merry episode has been brought to you by Wasatch Wagyu, purveyors of the best beef in the world, now available online at wasatchwagyu.com. A 20% discount on the world's best beef is now available for all listeners of the Merry Podcast using coupon code SLAY2019, a coupon that not only gets you a deal, but one that also makes a donation to SantaSleigh.org, a merry little effort to help families in need at Christmas. Please redeem coupon code SLAY2019 at WasatchWagyu.com. And please join us at the merry forums of MyMerryChristmas.com, where you can make merry with us year-round as we continue our celebration of Christmas begun years ago in 1991. For MyMerryChristmas.com and the Merry Little Podcast, this is Jeff Westover wishing you and yours a very Merry Christmas.